ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Joey Galloway and Kevin Agande.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. It is a Thursday. Kevin Agande with you, and Joey Galloway will join me in a matter of minutes. If you are a fan of this podcast, we have a new format where we hear from a variety of different voices. Paul Feinbaum on Sunday joins Matt Berry, as well as Kirk Herbstreit with Matt on Monday. And then Tuesday, we got David Pollack with Reese Davis. Yesterday, we taped myself with Booger McFarlane. And on Thursdays, Joey Galloway would join us with his picks, little insight from his opinion about Ohio State. And I don't call him our Big Ten expert, but he's more locked in on what's going on in the Big Ten. So we'll get his thoughts on a handful of different matchups. Also on Thursday, we're going to try and bring in one of our college football insiders as well. After talking to Joey and hearing his picks and hearing all the wrong picks he's going to make, we're going to bring in a reporter who kind of gives us their perspective. They'll empty the notebook, and Andrea Adelson will join us. She's at the bounce house tonight, getting ready for Boise State and UCF, that game on ESPN. We'll talk to her later on the podcast and also get her thoughts about some key games here in the ACC. But first, here's Joey. And it's great to have Joey Galloway with us on Thursdays. So we had Booger yesterday, and I'm looking forward to this, Joey, as we get ready for a full slate of games with week one. It's Thursday when we're taping this. We've got 16 games tonight. Top 25 teams in action: Coastal Carolina, Utah, Arizona State. We got Boise State versus UCF. Also, we got Ohio State in action against Minnesota. And you're in Minnesota right now joining us as we're taping this. And one of those teams, you know, we talk about Clemson and Georgia, Booger and I yesterday, a little bit about Alabama. I want to get your thoughts. I saved Ohio State just for you. Because when you look at the way this team is built, 10 guys drafted, they come in and out, including Justin Fields and Trey Sermon, but the wide receiver depth, the conversation in the backfield surrounding Master Teague, you bring in CJ Stroud, and that QB room is stacked. What are your first impressions before tonight's game against Minnesota?
This is a very good football team. I've had a chance to spend some time in two different places over the summer. I was in Alabama because I called their spring game, and I've had a chance to spend some time at Ohio State because I live in Columbus and I've been there. The coaching staffs are very excited about their teams at Alabama and at Ohio State. Now, I don't take that lightly, because at this time of year, we see all the press conferences. We see all the coaches talking about how hard they've worked, how good they think they are coming in. These two situations are different because both are dealing with retooling, basically, replacing stars. Ohio State replacing Justin Fields, Alabama replacing Mac Jones. Like, they've all lost a lot of talent. And typically speaking, when you go through summers and springs and you talk to these coaches, typically they would say, hey, we got to replace some guys. You know, of course, obviously some people left. Alabama and Nick Saban and Ryan Day at Ohio State are very excited about these football teams that they have playing this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. I think that both teams will be very good, and I think Ohio State's going to get off to a great start against Minnesota.
Okay, when you look at the defense, I'm excited to see Haskell Garrett again. I think the kid's a stud. You know that. Zach Harrison, seven banks in the backfield. I should say in the secondary, the backfield of that defense here. When you talk about the excitement of this team, is this a special team in your mind right now leading into the season?
I think Ohio State has raised the bar on special. Should they win the Big Ten? Absolutely. But because they've been so successful in recent years, for Ohio State to be special would be obviously winning a national championship. They got to the game last year. They've got to the playoffs in the past few years. And so when you look at that upper echelon of teams now in college football, Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State, you could throw a Georgia, maybe LSU in there. I think when you use the word special, it takes an entirely different meaning. It isn't just winning their conference, winning their division, getting to a bowl game. For these teams to be considered special at this stage, it is what do you do if and when you get to the college football playoff? Ohio State is a college football playoff caliber football team. If they don't get there from top to bottom, they'll be disappointed.
Alave, Wilson, they help any quarterback. You know, no matter who you are, as a wide receiver, you know that and what they've brought to the offense last year with Fields here. But help me understand this QB room. When it comes to talent specifically, I don't think we've seen a QB room like this in a very long time when we talk about ratings in the high school level and stuff. I know you could bring up Alabama and what they recently had with Tua and Jalen Hurts and Mac Jones. But when it comes to high school ratings and the Jack Millers, the Kyle McCords, the Quinn Ewers, and then the C.J. Strouds. I've never seen a room like this. What makes C.J. Stroud separate himself on the field to get the start tonight?
I've never looked at, like, stars on a player, ever. I learned my lesson when I played college football because guys come in with highly rated guys that are going to be terrific, and then they don't pan out. Or guys that weren't supposed to be very good pan out and they become very good. So I don't really look at ratings in a room. I don't know what those guys at Ohio State or anywhere else star-wise come in at. I will say that having a chance to talk to C.J. Stroud and be around him and sort of watch him grow, he is as confident going into a season as any Ohio State quarterback I've been around. And I'm sure part of that has to do with the offensive line will be outstanding. They feel very good about not just Master Teague, but some of the young running backs they have in. You can't not feel good about having two first-round receivers to the outside. I think C.J. Stroud is stepping into probably the best situation from a pieces around him standpoint as anybody in college football. So C.J. Stroud is ready to go. What happens moving forward will be very interesting, not just at Ohio State, but everywhere, because people can transfer and people can get paid. And so you've seen Ewers leave high school early to come get paid. So what happens after year one of the NIL when certain guys see certain people getting paid certain places? What stops a Kevin Nagandi, who is wearing number one, playing for Temple, got his jersey on the wall, realizes I can get paid somewhere else, make more money? Does a Kevin Nagandi leave Temple and go make more money somewhere else? That's the stuff we're going to be dealing with. This is going to get real interesting.
You know how much I love Philadelphia. But, you know, when you're an 18 to 22-year-old, you go where the money's at because that you're setting up things for your family. And each person is different, right? Background-wise and situational-wise and what you need to do. That is a different topic for a different day. All right, let's make our picks because we're going to do this every Thursday. And, you know, you're on ESPN wearing a crown on social media with you and Jesse with your back and forth. We got a handful of great games. Let's start with Friday night. Our boy Mac Brown, North Carolina, going to Lane Stadium at Virginia Tech. They're favored by 5.5 points, but that place will be rocking. I mean, this is the first big home game in 22 months. Sam Howell and company lost a handful of offensive weapons. Who you got? Carolina laying 5.5 against Virginia Tech.
Oh, so we're going with the points here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I like Carolina. Now, again, let me just say this. We haven't seen these teams play yet. So we just basically going off of what they have returning.
I see what you're doing. You're laying down the groundwork. So when you get something wrong, you'll be absolutely like, see, right. I didn't know, Kev.
Kev, you've done this stuff before where you'd be like, hey, maybe possibly this team is going to be good. You know what I mean? Like you hedge your bet. I feel of all the things you're probably going to ask me, I feel strongly about Carolina laying the points. I'm good on that one.
Covering by 5.5. We will see fantastic game over on ESPN. You know, number two, Oklahoma and Norman against Tulane. And we want a side note here, our thoughts of, because obviously football is going to be discussed in the podcast, but the people in the entire region where Tulane is in Louisiana and Mississippi, affected by Hurricane Ida. That's got to be a lot on the way to of those players, as well as LSU and all the programs in Louisiana, because they're dealing with a lot of other things.
Right.
So number two, Oklahoma, that game's a home game for Tulane, but it's in Norman. Spencer Rattler, Kennedy Brooks, I mean, Alex Grinch in that defense. I'm not so much asking you to pick a game here. I just want your early thoughts on Oklahoma here, because it feels like their only tough battle, if you look at the schedule, maybe Texas, but Iowa State in Norman on November 20th.
Yeah, I would look at Iowa State as going in as their toughest game. And I would not be surprised with what Iowa State has coming back. Especially offensively, if Iowa State does come out of the Big 12, I wouldn't be surprised if that happens. As far as Oklahoma's concerned, I feel like the past couple years, we've been saying, hey, this defense is going to be better. It only takes me a couple years, Kev, before I get to a point where I'm going to have to see it first.
You just give up, right?
I'm not one of those people that is going to say, hey, on paper, they should be better. At this stage, much like when people tell me that this is going to be Georgia's year or that Miami's very talented. At this stage with like Georgia, Miami, Oklahoma's defense, I'm going to need to see it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to believe it until I see it. Now, I don't think Oklahoma has any issues with most of their schedule. But again, Oklahoma's in that upper echelon of teams that we talk about their chances to win it all. I don't know that they're better than Iowa State with Breece Hall, Brock Purdy at quarterback. You know, we're talking about the best running back in the Big 12. Is they're going to have something to say about this. Offensive line returning. So I need to see Oklahoma first before I'm going to say, hey, that's an elite level defense.
I got to say one thing, but the way Oklahoma has been in the past, if they're just, you know, in the middle of the road here and Alex Grinch getting his players, Nick Bonito, like if they're just, yeah, if they're just holding opponents to under 30 points, mm-hmm, Spencer Rattler and the way that offense is built and what, you know, Lincoln Riley's put together, I like Oklahoma, but the Oklahoma always, it's not against the toughest opponents. Oklahoma gives us one of those dog games against Kansas State where you're scratching your head and say, what the heck just happened? Like, you'll handle Texas. You'll handle Baylor when they were good. You'll handle Iowa State. And, well, they didn't handle Iowa State in most recent conversations. But still, they'll give us one of those games where you're just like, but I really like Oklahoma and Ohio State as we are taping this heading into week one. Let's get back to our picks here, because I did want to talk a little bit about Oklahoma and Ohio State, something we haven't talked about all week. All right, staying in the Big Ten. Number 19, Penn State, at number 12, Wisconsin. Badgers favored by 5.5. This is a very interesting game at you know, Camp Randall. And that Sean Clifford's third OC. He's 23 years old. You got Graham Mertz on the other side. Who you got in a game like this?
Man, this one's tough. This one, it was almost like a year was erased from Penn State and Wisconsin. They weren't what we normally see out of them. You know, both teams just winning four games. This one is tough for me because I don't really know. We know what Wisconsin's going to be. Wisconsin's going to be a big physical offensive line with a run game, quarterback play action pass. We know what they're going to do. I would like to think that Penn State is going to be a better football team than they were last year. Give me Wisconsin.
I'm with you. I'm with you with Wisconsin laying the points. I'm with you with Carolina laying the points there. And Jalen Berger was supposed to be the star running back for Wisconsin. Chez Malusi, the Clemson transfer, will get the start here. We'll see how that plays out for Wisconsin and that defense with Jim Leonard on the other side with 8 starters back. All right, so we're on the same page here. Indiana at number 18, Iowa. Iowa laying 3.5, this one at Kinnick, and it feels like this is on a neutral field. It would just be an even game. Who you got in this one?
Again, this is another tough one, which is why they put these points in here.
That's why I asked you these big games.
Yeah, Indiana, I would like to be on the Indiana bandwagon. I want to get on because it was fun last year. They were fun to watch. It was fun to watch them go toe-to-toe with Ohio State in Columbus, almost pull off a win. Indiana typically isn't built to go back to back and create something that is growing. I think this Indiana team is different. But because this game is at Iowa, forget that, Kev. Give me Indiana. Let's go.
Are you taking Indiana outright? You're taking Indiana outright.
Let's go. Give me Indiana. Keep it going.
Wow. Okay. Well, Penix and Freifogel, Hendershot. I love the offense. I'm such a big fan of Tyler Goodson at running back for Iowa. I'm going with Iowa, and it feels like one of those games on a field goal, and Iowa wins by two. That's why this line is so shaky at -3. But I will go with Iowa laying the three. You go with Indiana. All right, that's our split right there. You got Indiana winning outright. This is another interesting matchup. We've got three more here. Number 21, Texas, and they're hosting number 23, Louisiana. Darrell Royal Stadium, 100,000 expected for Steve Sarkisian's debut. The Raging Cajuns, Billy Napier's done a great job. 10 offensive starters back on a team that went 10-1, including Levi Lewis. How do you view Texas in a game like this with Sark? And they've got a freshman in Hudson Card, the redshirt freshman, starting.
Louisiana.
The line, by the way, is -8, Texas.
-8, Texas?
Yes.
Give me Louisiana. Give me Louisiana. Went in, knocked off Iowa State last year. I just believe that they feel like they can beat Big 12 teams. Simple as that. They think that they can go in and knock off the Big 12. It starts right now. Hey, look, I think in the long run, Sark is going to turn Texas around. I don't know what Texas is right now. They were, once again, terrible on the defensive side of the ball. And I don't know that you fix that in 1 year. I don't know that you can flip your defensive attitude in a year. I'll take Louisiana and the points.
What a tough game for Sark. Just ridiculously, your opener, and you got a redshirt freshman, but they say he's got the it factor. Bijan Robinson, a special running back at Texas. Yeah. I've got Louisiana and the points. I think Texas will win, but I'm with you in a game like this. That's just way too many points for Texas in a debut. Yeah. Two other key games here, and of course, it's Georgia versus Clemson. Clemson laying the three. Who do you have?
I like Georgia. And again, I've mentioned that Georgia's a team that is very talented. JT Daniels coming back. I think, from what I've heard, that they have great skill positions. I haven't seen them. We haven't played any games. I'm just listening to the noise, as I call it. But I do think that Georgia is a very good football team. They don't have Alabama on their schedule this year in the regular season. And I think that is key for Georgia. This could be their year to go into the SEC championship game undefeated. And if they can do that with a Clemson win on their schedule, we'll be having a conversation about two SEC teams getting into the college football playoff. I think they get this started off right and they get a win at Clemson.
Wow, this is a tough one. The game's in Charlotte, but you can make a case. There's going to be a lot of people from the Clemson area making the trip. Clemson laying three. I really like Georgia this season, but I just got to see Georgia actually win one of these type of games. You know, one of these big moment games. So I'm going Clemson laying the 3 points.
This is going to be the second time you're wrong.
Okay.
But that's fine. We need this.
We're not going to be lockstep all the way through in this. That's not what we do here.
Why would you want to be right?
Yeah. For somebody who said, well, from what I'm hearing, I'm just going to go based on that. Yeah, that's some expert analysis. Okay.
Yes, that's my
last game. This will be an interesting game because we know both sides really well. Chip Kelly and UCLA hosting Burger McFarland's LSU squad.
UCLA.
LSU. Laying the three.
UCLA, all you had to say was booger. UCLA. Let's go, Chip, just because I would appreciate booger losing. I don't care who it is. I'm going to put my own rep on the line here and risk being wrong. behind Chip and what they look like against Hawaii. I know Boog is your guy. Let's see if you're going to let
him
second.
So are you taking UCLA outright in a game like this? Like straight up?
C-L-A.
He is, Taylor. He is. He's taking UCLA to win. So outright.
Booger's your guy.
Booger's your guy too. Booger's your guy too.
I don't like Boog.
Let me tell you, Joey, if they lose this game, Booger's not going to hear the end of it.
Are you picking against UCLA? I mean, against LSU. That's what I need to know, Kev.
I'm taking LSU. Laying the 3.
Why is that not a surprise?
But you want to know why? There's only one reason why. It's because
Boog is standing in your guest room right now?
No. Yeah. For one reason. Oh, trust me. Listen, if UCLA wins, to give Boog the business, I think we'll all enjoy that. I just think LSU just has too much talent. They just have too much talent and coming into a game like this when you look at the roster comparison. So I'm going with LSU. Laying the 3. But man, oh man, I cannot wait to see how that plays out on Saturday night.
So it's a win-win situation for you is what you just set up. If LSU wins,
yeah, you're basically right. Yes.
If LSU loses, you're excited because you get to give it to Boog.
Exactly. So I win regardless. And that's how you got to play the numbers here, Joey.
Not a surprise, win regardless. Kev. Well, appreciate you didn't disappoint, Kev. That's about what I expected.
Joey, listen, have fun tonight. Of course, Ohio State, Minnesota, and can't wait to see you on campus in a couple days. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. We do this every Thursday here in the College Football Podcast.
All right, Kev. See you later, man.
Hey, thanks for dressing up.
Yeah, I like the hat, buddy.
Before we move on and talk to Andrea Adelson, I wanted to let all of our listeners who are ESPN Plus subscribers know that right now you can join an ESPN Plus fantasy football league for a chance to win $250,000. The sweepstakes is U.S. only, 18 or older, no purchase necessary. Visit ESPN.com/ESPN Plus football rules for full details and official rules. All right, we're going to do this every Thursday. I love that we can have our reporters from around the country join us, and they're the college football insiders. They're covering not just one team, but multiple teams, sometimes multiple conferences. Andrea Adelson joining us from ESPN.com. She's going to be at the Bounce House tonight for Boise State UCF. We will talk a little bit about that matchup in a moment, but let's stay in the ACC conversation, a conference that you are close to. Clemson and Georgia, that's the biggest game, not of the weekend, but of the season. I have a feeling that whatever happens in that game on Saturday night will have repercussions in November when we're talking about the playoff. DJ Uiagalelei will be the center conversation when we talk about Clemson. But there are a lot of other things to focus on with the Tigers coming into a game like this against Georgia. And what stands out to you, Andrea?
What is this defense going to look like? How are they going to respond after the last time we saw them, which was a worst performance defensively of the Brent Venables era at Clemson in the playoff loss to Ohio State? That defense was completely outcoached by the other side. They were clearly not motivated for whatever reason, out of position and out of sorts the entire game. And I remember as the game started and it didn't really look like the typical Clemson defense, I started to think to myself, okay, they're going to turn it around though. I mean, this is Brent Venables' defense. We're going to see some sort of adjustment. And that adjustment never came. And really, that's been the discussion on the defensive side for Clemson the entire offseason. I remember talking to James Skowski at ACC Kickoff in Charlotte about trying to put that game behind them. And he said, look, we all know we got our, I don't know if I can say the word, bleeps kicked. But we've got to move past that. And yet it's a reminder for them about what happened and how they cannot allow that to happen again in a game like this where the stakes are so high. I think we all know their defensive front is going to be one of the best in the country. But what do the linebackers look like? And there are major depth concerns in the secondary as well. So if they cannot perform at a high level on the defensive line to set the tone, that is going to leave the back end in potentially dire straits in this opener. So that's why I think there's so much on the defensive line and on the defense in general for Clemson, because that has always been the reliable part of this team, right? And it wasn't reliable against Ohio State. So what are they going to look like on Saturday?
Well, the Tigers' standard is not just making the playoff. It's winning national championships, right? It's not just winning the ACC. It's winning national championships. Can they afford to lose this game on Saturday? I mean, I know you can make the case that Georgia can afford to lose because of what they do in the SEC. And if they win the SEC, the title, and they beat potentially Alabama, whoever comes out of the West, they have a legit shot regardless if they lose Saturday night. Can you make the same case for Clemson?
It all depends on what happens with the rest of the ACC. And right now, after Georgia, there are zero ranked teams on Clemson's schedule. They do not face any of the preseason ranked ACC teams in the regular season, and South Carolina is not ranked. That's their last game at the end of the year. So as we sit here right now, looking at that schedule, it's hard to say that they can survive a loss. But on the other hand, in 2016, when they won the national championship, they survived a loss in November to Pitt. And Pitt was not ranked at that time. So for me, I think this is as close to a must win as it gets for Clemson because of the way the schedule plays out. But if the ACC is better than what we're anticipating right now, then potentially there's some room for a loss in the first week of the season, but they won't be able to lose another game. I mean, there is no way they can afford to take another loss if they lose to Georgia to keep those playoff hopes alive.
And then you got to root for a team like North Carolina to kind of win out. So you have a very good matchup in the ACC title game. And you could say, see, we beat a top 10 team or potentially a top 5 team if Carolina comes in undefeated the rest of the way, right?
Absolutely. Carolina has a very challenging game to open the season at Virginia Tech. That is not going to be a gimme game. And I know Virginia Tech has been up and down, but North Carolina has not played well over the last couple of seasons with these rising expectations. And that's something that this program has to overcome if they want to be in any position to compete for an ACC championship or for a college football playoff spot. So I'm looking at North Carolina on Friday night at Blacksburg to see how they're able to respond with so much on the line. That's a coastal division game that has ramifications for the ACC championship. And that's game one for North Carolina. So that's a huge game for them. And we may know more about how this race is going to shake out before Clemson even plays Georgia on Saturday because of that Friday night game.
Place is going to be rocking as well. I mean, like, it's going to be the first big environment in 22 months there in Blacksburg. We will see how it plays out as Carolina's 5.5-point favorites in the matchup against the Hokies. Mac Brown has stressed this. We got to play four quarters, not just one half. We will see how that plays out. A couple of other ACC teams that we will see on ABC this weekend, and it's the game before Clemson, Georgia. That is Miami versus number one Alabama and De'Arik King. And De'Arik King's journey, I'm just so fascinated by it because he's been through a lot. Let's not forget he's coming off the ACL injury. You did a story on him, a feature last month. What stood out about this young man here as he gets ready for his final season?
He has big plans for Miami this year. There's a reason he decided to come back. Then he gets hurt a week later, and he put everything he had into his rehab so he could come back and help Miami change the narrative and win a championship. The way that he approached the rehab is something I have not heard of in many years. He did two-a-day rehabs, Kevin. He was in there in the morning. He took a break for lunch. He was back in the afternoon. Because of the short time frame, getting hurt at the end of December, knowing the opener was against Alabama, that gave him about 8 months. Not just an ACL, by the way. There was a meniscus injury in there, too. So two significant injuries to his knee in a time frame that usually takes about 9 to 12 months to come back from. He had an 8-month window. So that's why he sped up the process, because he knew he wanted to be back for this game, knowing how important it was for Miami. And his trainers were working with him every step of the way. And it wasn't just the rehab. He's in every team meeting. He's in the lift sessions, working out with his teammates as well to show them, hey, I'm not just over here in the training room. I'm here in the weight room with you guys, putting in every single ounce of effort that I can to lead this team. The thing about Miami over the last few years, the locker room has kind of been in disarray. But ever since De'Arik has arrived on campus, that locker room now is united and they're all united moving in the same direction. And seeing the way D'Eriq worked, it set the tone for the rest of his teammates. If D'Eriq King can work that hard, this is what receiver Mike Harley told me, then what am I doing just putting in little effort? I got to put in my max effort. I'm healthy. I can do this if he's doing it. So to me, it feels collectively that what D'Eriq was able to do with the rehab had a major impact and influence on the rest of the team. But we'll see what happens against Alabama, because Miami, over its last several games against top-ranked teams, has gotten blown out, and it hasn't even been close. So whether D'Eriq can be that X factor for Miami and some of these veterans that they have coming back against Alabama, that's the big question. But D'Eriq says he's healthy, he's comfortable, he feels great in this offense. Now it's up to him and his teammates to deliver on some of these promises that they've made to each other.
Remarkable. I mean, to come back from an ACL injury in less than a year, and the time frame, and to work out over the offseason in 2-a-days, and now he's got to play maybe the best defense he'll see all season in Alabama, which is stacked. We will see if he could help change the narrative. And let's stay in the state of Florida and changing the narrative. And that's what Mike Norvell is trying to do with Florida State. That's another game on ABC. This is Sunday night against Notre Dame. And it's in Tallahassee. Mackenzie Milton, Travis Jordan. Take your pick. It feels like it's Mackenzie or Travis Jordan on the depth chart right now heading into a game like this. And Mackenzie's journey back from a devastating injury. What more can you tell us about this? You have a piece coming out over the weekend here on what he's trying to do to get back on the field after just being fantastic at UCF.
Well, all the praise I just gave D'Eriq King for the work he's done, Mackenzie Milton has worked almost 3 years to get back and play. So if D'Eriq had to super speed up that process with 2-a-days, Mackenzie has been working basically every single day since he got hurt in late November 2018 so he can take a snap again. He doesn't want any pity snaps. He doesn't want any sympathy snaps. He doesn't want anybody to feel bad for him. He wants to earn this starting job fair and square. And he's made that clear to Mike Norvell. He's made that clear to their offensive coordinator, Kenny Dillingham. He's made that clear to anybody who has spoken to him. And he absolutely, absolutely has a chance to start for Florida State. The coaches are not going to announce anything before kickoff. And you understand why, right? You want Notre Dame to go back and start studying Mackenzie Milton from 2017. I mean, you want them to go way, way back in the archives. But the fact that Mackenzie is here at this point with an opportunity to start for Florida State, it's hard for me to come up with the words beyond miraculous because he almost lost his leg. They were close to amputating his leg after that injury. He had artery damage and blood flow loss, blood loss. He had nerve damage. He had damage to his knee, dislocated, couple ligaments. So to come back from that, to get to this point on a ginormous stage is a massive tribute to the work that he's put in, to all the doctors and coaches and trainers and everybody who's helped get him to this point. But it's really been up to Mackenzie, because he's had to put that work in. And there were bad days and there were setbacks and there were infections and there were a lot of signs that said, maybe not a good idea to do this. And he just kept plowing forward. And to me, he's the greatest story in college football right now. And Florida State on Sunday night is going to be such an emotional place because of the tributes they're going to have to Bobby Bowden, because it's going to be packed. This is going to be Mike Norvell's first time in a sold out Doak Campbell Stadium. And now you add into it the potential for Mackenzie Milton to complete this comeback with 75,000 people doing the tomahawk chop and screaming the war chant. I've already got goosebumps thinking about the moment, Kevin, and I'm going to be there. And whether he's the first guy out or not, if he gets to play in this game, it's just an unbelievable accomplishment. And I know that the entire country is going to be rooting for that to happen.
And, you know, and one thing that'll stand out is the buzz will be back, at least in that the first few minutes of that game in Tallahassee, something we haven't seen in years. Like, just that vibe. Doak is a special place when Florida State's playing great football under the lights. There's just something special about it with college football. And regardless of the outcome for McKenzie, he won. Because to do what he's done in nearly 3 years in this comeback, to get back on the field and actually suit up is quite remarkable. I look forward to watching your story and reading more about it on Sunday when that game is matched up between Florida State and Notre Dame on ABC. How about the game tonight? The bounce house will be bumping. UCF and Boise State, and it feels like Boise State set the standard there, right, for the group of five, and then UCF said, all right, we're going to duplicate, and then a few years later do the same thing that you're doing, and now we get these two teams meeting with two new head coaches, one that everybody's familiar with in Gus Malzahn.
Kevin, I've heard a rumor that there is a Gus bus on the UCF campus. I need to find this Gus bus so I can get on it. But this just speaks to the excitement around his hire and what he's been able to do, at least during talking season, is getting the fans fired up for UCF again. After what was a disappointing season for them a year ago, you've got Dylan Gabriel coming back at quarterback. You've got skill players across the board. They expect to be better defensively. And I think UCF, which, as strange as it sounds, is playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. I mean, these were the guys that won 25 straight games and were the center of national discussion. Whether you love them or you hated them, you were talking about UCF. Well, now people are talking about Cincinnati, and I don't think they like that very much. And so in my conversations with Dylan Gabriel over the last few months, they are focused and determined to get that conversation back to UCF. And on the other side of it for Boise State, that's a program also looking to get back in the conversation. But Kevin, when I first started at ESPN, I was covering Boise State when they were rattling cages and going to the BCS and should they get one of the top two spots. And now here in Orlando, I've been able to cover UCF. And there's no question that those two programs and their success, especially against the quote, big boys, has led us to not only a playoff, but now the potential for playoff expansion, because both those programs did it on the field and were also vocal about wanting to have a chance to prove it in the postseason. So it's like worlds colliding today. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited to see it. I'm really excited to see what Andy Avalos has going for Boise State. They've got a veteran quarterback coming back too. So it's going to be an exciting atmosphere. It's sold out crowd, Kevin. I'm looking forward to feeling the press box shake because that's what happens when it's a fired up, sold out crowd. That's why it's called the bounce house. So hopefully it's a great season for both programs and we can talk about them a little bit more.
Yeah, Avalos, by the way, coming from Oregon, and everybody that's followed the Boise State program, he was a star linebacker there and then came back as a DC. So they kept it in within the family for him to be there as a Bronco. Andrew, it's always great to have you with us, and thank you for emptying the notebook here heading into week one. I'm just glad we got college football. You get a double dose there, of course, Thursday, and then heading into the weekend. So thanks for joining us here on the College Football Podcast.
It's week one, Kevin! Woo!
Big thanks to Andrea Adelson. Listen, you could just feel the energy coming through that conversation. I'm actually really jealous because stadiums are going to be packed throughout the country, and this buildup in week one after what we went through last year, it's just going to be cool. Like, it'll feel like it's a step. I know we're in a pandemic, but a step towards normalcy, at least on Saturdays. And we're going to get it on Thursday night, which is going to be great. So thank you to her for joining us. Again, every Thursday, we'll have our ESPN College Football Insiders joining us after we get Joey Galloway's picks. So shout out to him for joining us. And of course, shout out to Taylor Schwenk, who always makes sure the podcast is well done and put together. And cannot wait for the weekend. We appreciate you guys being followers of the podcast as we bring out the new schedule this week, and looking forward to the fall. Take care, be safe, and enjoy week one.